Hi, my name is Johnny Gartner, and welcome back to the Cedar 60 podcast. At Cedar 60, our mission is to engage with culture and politics from the distinctive lens of the gospel. Today, we are excited to have Dr. Kerry Oberbrunner on the podcast to discuss business and the soul from publishing to blockchain. Kerry, thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Great to be here, Johnny.
So you have a pretty cool life story. I was wondering if we could just jump right in, if you could kind of talk a little bit about your background and how you've ended up now recently at Cedarville University.
Yes. All right. So grew up in Wisconsin as a pastor's kid. Both parents were in the nonprofit world and, you know, was never crazy excited about money. We didn't have much of it. And we were just about impacting people's lives. So my parents worked at the Salvation Army. And we would have homeless people over often, and it was just a thing, you know, growing up helping people. So everything was cool, but basically as a young kid, I struggled with stuttering. So I didn't, I didn't really speak a lot in the beginning, went to speech therapy, and kind of turned pain inside. And so from a young age, I remember, even at the age of 10, struggling with biting. And, you know, that sounds kind of odd to some people, but it started as self-harm. And it was just a way to, just punish yourself, essentially. For you feel pain, you feel bad, you don't know how to express it as a kid. Well, that turned into, as a teenager, cutting. And so, you know, I became essentially an under-the-radar cutter, where nobody knew about it. I was a highly functioning kid. I went to a Christian college, Grace College, and I was the student chaplain. And so on the outside, everyone would be like, wow, Kerry's a great guy, and he takes leadership, and he's, just a high performer. But then on the inside, it was becoming more of a destructive behavior that would happen occasionally. And it all kind of like hit the fan proverbially. When I'm at Grace and I'm studying to be a pastor, actually an Air Force chaplain, and the professor says, "You're not being open. You're not being honest. You're in counseling class. What's going on here?" Long story short, I basically confessed. I'm like, "Hey, I struggle with self-injury. I've never told anybody that." Well, that professor's no longer there. I had some really good professors, but that one actually flunked me. And he said, "You're not fit to be a counselor." And thankfully, I had the vice president as a friend and mentor. And he's like, "Hey, that's not happening. You're still in the class. We're going to get you counseling." And so God used counseling and honesty and authenticity to really free me up, essentially. Quick story, moved into the pastorate. I actually met you in Columbus, Ohio, and I became first a senior pastor of a small church, then a youth pastor at the church you went to, and everything was cool, but I started to feel like I was supposed to write books. Writing actually was what helped me overcome self-injury, specifically the Psalms, the imprecatory Psalms, where David is honest about his pain, his feelings. And I thought, wow, how can a guy after a man after God's own heart write these things? Mm-hmm. And I learned that spirituality is actually about authenticity. It's about recognizing our depraved condition, our need for God. That's where grace can show up, not self-harm. Mm-hmm. And so then I felt like the church was a little bit claustrophobic, not in a bad way, but just, I guess I was wired to be an entrepreneur. And so I thought to myself, I'm going to become an entrepreneur, and moved into the publishing world and had just a great run of success with that. Still have that company, and then most recently, blockchain.
Yeah, that's a really wonderful story. Thank you so much.
Fast version.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing it. We'll probably come back to a little bit of it once we kind of talk about your publishing company, but right now I'd love to talk about your project, Blockchain Life. For probably some of our listeners, including me, the blockchain seems a little kind of like a curious subject, don't know much about it, but in your most recent book, Blockchain Life, you argue that it and some other upcoming technologies are going to be really important way sooner than many expect. So if you want to kind of talk about what the blockchain is and kind of why these technologies are so important.
I think, so blockchain has been around since the 90s, but it really didn't take shape because we didn't know what to do with it. But the point that I think why it got so big, I mean, yes, crypto runs on blockchain technology, and of course that means Bitcoin, but bigger than that, Johnny, what I think is, you know, kind of philosophically why I think blockchain went big is because of truth. Now, that sounds really crazy, but there's a book out there called The Truth Machine, and it's actually about blockchain. And here's what it means. It means that blockchain is a distributed ledger. So think about three major world events that happened, and this gets into politics. Mm-hmm. You had the housing crash, which basically said, whoa, we can't trust what people are saying with mortgages. So that eroded trust, and it said, we got to have an outside third-party entity verification, validation, that's going to say, look, this is not just one source of truth, this is a distributed version of truth that's verified by multiple people. Then you had the election in 2016, and whether you are Democrat or Republican, it really doesn't matter for this point. The point is that we all felt that the last couple elections, something was going on. You know, and regardless of what party you lined up, a major point of this was fake votes and real votes and, you know, stuffing the ballot boxes. And so again, that's eroding truth. We cannot trust the government. We cannot trust a centralized authority to tell us. Then you had Corona, where you began to see with the pandemic, did it start in China? Did it not start in China? Who knew? Did they not know? Like, you, again, you began to see this lack of trust. So what does blockchain do? Blockchain basically says that we take a ledger, and instead of it being Chase Ledger, Chase Bank, or Ohio State Ledger, University Ledger, you now have a ledger that is open, it's public, it's verified by computers that are literally distributed across the planet. And for you to actually hack a blockchain, you would have to take over 51% of the computers. And not only that, you would have to then go back multiple blocks and like essentially hack it and then hack it again and then hack it again, because all the informations have been verified block after block after block. So that's essentially the unsexy explanation of a blockchain, that it's a public distributed ledger that essentially is the railway for most other technologies in Web3 that they're built on.
So you've kind of given a really wonderful explanation of a very obviously complicated technology, but what kind of got you interested in kind of the entrepreneurial business technology side of the industry?
I went down to Miami, which is one of the crypto capitals of the world, and I met a publishing friend, and he began to just talk to me about Miami and how people were paying for different products with their digital wallets. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, I've never been fascinated by crypto personally, but what did totally rock my world is when in March 21, almost 2 years ago now, he said, have you heard of this thing called NFTs, non-fungible tokens? And I said, no. And then he said, well, let me explain. It's like a digital art. It's like one of one. And I still wasn't that impressed. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I get it. I totally get this thing. I said, this is gonna change the world. And the reason why I said that is because I've seen a shift in our world from physical to digital. I mean, one of my books is called Unhackable, and it talks about human knowledge used to double every 1,000 years. Today it doubles every 12 hours. So we have a society that is like just blowing up with information. Why? Because we became the creator economy. You give smartphones to every person on the planet, now all of a sudden they have a built-in media company in the palm of their hands. They can do banking. They can do education. They can do pretty much anything in the palm of their hands, which was what powered the entire, you know, Apollo mission. We're so much more sophisticated with just one smartphone, and then you put all the smartphones together. But what I began to realize is that we are now living in a blended world. And what I mean by that is digital and physical. In fact, there's a term called phygital. And there's a real condition called digiphrenia, which means that I exist right now on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, my email. In other words, there's multiple personas of me right now that exist in multiple places, and that actually creates psychological pressure. Mm-hmm. So what I began to see is your generation during the pandemic, here's a total example. Humanity has always tried to what's called flex. We've always tried to impress people. We've always tried to have external artifacts create a sense of who's in, who's out. So you'd walk by a certain Native American and be like, oh, wow, look at their feather. That means something. Or, you know, look at that settler, or look at that, artist. We, you know, from the watches that you wear to the clothes that you wear, you are totally branding yourself. And think about that term, branding. It was used of cattle. You know, why? Mm-hmm. To say who's in a certain ownership. And that's what branding is. But now all of a sudden, in my generation, we showed up in a party with Nike shoes, and it was like, whoa, did you see Joel's shoes? Man, he's got the new Air Jordans. Wow, look at that. And we used physical objects to create a sense of social flex. Mm. Your generation couldn't show up during the pandemic physically because of quarantine. So where did they show up? They showed up digitally. And now they show up digitally as avatars. And now their avatars can have clothes, which are, by the way, NFTs. A non-fungible token is simply a digital asset that cannot be replicated, and the ownership is tied back to a smart contract, and the smart contract is actually created on the blockchain. So you start seeing that blockchain is actually the railways that everything else is built on. So everything in this room that we're looking at right now, Abraham Lincoln picture, this desk, that clock, will, in my opinion, have a digital twin in the near future. And why? Because practical reasons. How do I know that laptop of yours right there is yours? You know, I don't know for sure. You say it's yours, but it's tough to prove. Unless you have a corresponding NFT that is a smart contract. And smart contracts are moving to the point where they are upheld in a court of law. So just like, remember, you don't remember this because it was in the year 2000. We used to have to sign literal contracts with pens. Think about that. It's called a wet signature. That's what you would sign documents with for hundreds of years until in 2000 they made a law that said now your digital signature can count in the court of law. Once they said that, you can imagine it changed everything. You can now do business with people around the world without literally having to show up and getting a physical signature. Well, that's what's starting to happen with smart contracts.
All of this sounds really critical to, yeah, you know, the future of our society, and especially for Christians as, yeah, a really important avenue to be involved with. So you've recently started teaching here, yeah, at Cedarville as an adjunct, and I am currently a student at Cedarville, and, you know, as these topics come up, and the whole point of this podcast is really is learning how to engage these issues from a, right, Christian perspective. I remember when you were pastor at the church that I attended when I was young, your book, The Fine Line, came, yes, out, and I have a quote that I'm going to read, ooh, here, wow, for our listeners. It says, you write that transformists, people who walk the line between separatists and conformists, live on the fine line and battle to integrate their Christianity with their culture. This camp causes critics to freeze in their tracks and rethink the only stereotypes of Christians they know. Transformists can cause the world to stop, stare, and shut up, exactly what God intends. And you cite 1 Peter 2:15, which says, "For such is the will of God that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men." Mm. So I think this is really applicable to what we're talking about here, yeah, with a very revolutionary technology that could be taking over the world, you know, even today.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for our listeners, not only interested in getting involved with entrepreneurship in the blockchain, but also in business in general, on how to stand on the line between, you know, being transformational and not just separating on these relatively scary technologies, but also not just adapting them and doing whatever it takes to be wildly successful or be the flexor like you were talking about?
Yeah.
So basically, I think that a lot of business people make their currency Jesus. I'm going to use a Bono U2 quote as an example, okay? So Bono has been an interesting character. I've studied him for years. But his point is basically like, look, my music is my currency to get me my platform. And on my platform is where I can share my message, okay? So what he's basically saying is like, look, currency is value. And he creates value by creating music. And once he creates good music, then he's earned the right to be on a platform, and then he can speak about the topics that they're passionate about. Christian business people who do it wrong make Jesus their currency instead of excellent products and services. It's actually a stereotype. I've met people that have said, oh my gosh, the moment somebody tells me, hey brother, hey sister, you know, or I'm a Christian businessman or Christian businesswoman, some people actually get majorly turned off because they think, oh my gosh, they're focused more on saying the right things than they are doing the right things. And Martin Luther was quoted to say, make a good shoe at a fair price, and in this God is glorified. So when people began to say, oh my gosh, Reformation, should we all become priests? Should we all become clergy? Should we all become pastors, missionaries, whatever you want to fill in the blank? His point was like, no, be a cobbler, make a great shoe and sell it at a fair price. And so what I've tried to do in business is like create amazing breakthrough technology, amazing service, amazing products. Does it always happen? No. But here's what, when it doesn't happen, I totally own it. And so I own it, I fix it, and I try to make it better. And that's what I think God then gets glory. And then the customers are like, whoa, what's up with you? Like, you didn't have to do that. Or I see you on fire, or you know, your team is servant leaders. What's up with that? And then you see that because the currency was a great product, great service, ethics, then I can have the right to speak about my faith.
So you've started a business called Igniting Souls, which is a publishing company, if I understand correctly. Could you talk a little bit about kind of doing exactly what you said and how that operates within the business?
So basically, when I, you know, because I studied to be a pastor, and you struggle with self-worth. You think, wow, okay, I'm a pastor. That's what I went to school with. What am I going to offer the business world? I mean, that was my thoughts in the beginning. What am I going to offer the world? And at first you think you have nothing. But then here's what happened, Johnny. You have amazing skills. Like, we're sitting here right now. You got two machines going. You're doing a podcast. I've seen your handouts. They're amazing. You have a release form. I mean, like, literally, I've been interviewed by 10-year podcasters and never had this excellence. So like, you really have something here. Well, guess what? When you develop a system, it's actually called a framework. A framework is a solution broken down into simple steps. So where your business model is, Johnny, is for you to basically say, look, I'm going to solve a problem. What problem could you solve? You could become a podcast producer. You could simply just take the framework that you have of onboarding a guest, and you could actually monetize that. You see this? So by doing that, you've solved a problem, you've created value. Well, guess what? I did that with books. When I wrote a book, I said, I don't want this just to be a business card, because that's what people say. People say, oh, books are just business cards. that's like the most offensive thing in the world, right? I mean, whoever stood up and said, this business card changed my life. But people have stood up and said, this book changed my life. And nobody's ever said, hey, our guest today, he's the creator of this business card. You don't say that, but you say he's the creator of this book. In other words, the author of this book. We use a term in English that we say Michael Jordan wrote the book on basketball. Did he write the book? I don't know. But there's a credibility and authority that comes with the book. Why? Because it's intellectual property. So our whole unique selling proposition in the marketplace is that we write, put it this way, we publish, protect, and promote your IP and turn it into 18 streams of income. So we publish the IP, intellectual property. We protect it through our blockchain technology, and then we promote it through 18 streams of income. That's our business model, and we attract Christians, non-Christians, from every walk of life, and that's what I get paid to do. And so I was at a Christmas party on December 6th, and it was for the International Center for Creativity. Do you know about that, the ICC? Okay, you know about that. So it's a branch of Cedarville, if you will. Jim Stevenson, Tom Balliet. And the moment I walked in there in 2019, it's because I preached a sermon at Life Point Church where I go. Tom heard me and said, oh my gosh, you got to come to the International Center for Creativity. I thought, that's the coolest name. I don't even know where that is. So it's Dublin, Ohio. So I went in and I said, guys, this is pretty forward. But I'm just going to ask you, can I rent out this facility for my events? And they said, well, we'll talk about that. We'll meet on that. Well, they turned out doing it. So I've been actually running some of my events there for authors and entrepreneurs the last 3 years. Well, long story short, I get invited to this Christmas party on December 6th. And by the way, I forget if I said this already. In 2005, did I tell you this, that I wanted to be a professor at Cedarville?
I've seen it.
You've seen it on Facebook. Okay, yes. But I didn't say it yet in this interview, I don't think. So for the person who's listening, yeah, 2005, I'm actually Johnny's parents' pastor, but I just feel that I'm being drawn to the university. And so I apply to Cedarville as a Bible professor because that's what my degree in was at the time, and they reject me. They sent me a letter there, and they were nice about it, but they said they're thinking about other candidates. So I just literally wrote in my Bible, and I'll show you the picture here while I find it. But I literally write it in my Bible, like in the margin. I found it yesterday because I really wanted to. Was I just dreaming or what? So in my Bible, in Psalm 75, I write. Here it is, October 23rd, 2005, Cedarville. Mm. Is that crazy or what? Mm. And I basically asked the Lord, I'm like, should I go there? Should I apply there? So I apply there, they say no. And I honestly move on then. You know, I keep being a pastor, I then become an entrepreneur. Well, I'm at this Christmas party, 2022, December 6th. And one of the guys there is like, hey, what are you doing? I say, I write books. Here's my most recent one. He asked about it. And I tell him all about NFTs, metaverse, Web3, AI, VR, virtual reality, AR, augmented reality. And he says, you need to teach at Cedarville. And I think he's just kind of like blowing smoke. So he said, I'm gonna connect you to Dr. Heyman and Dr. Guernsey. And, you know, you meet people at a party and you don't even know. You know, so I honestly didn't even think about it that night. The next morning, sure enough, the email's there. And I'm just going to go out on a limb and share some deep stuff here in a second. So these guys say, yeah, we're interested in marketing for you to teach one class. But what we're really interested in, and this is news and who knows, you're going to publish it, so we're just going to go with it. But they said, what we really want you to apply for is the Barry Chair of Entrepreneurship, because they've been looking for 2 years for the person. Is that crazy or what?
Yeah.
And I say, well, that's crazy. This is amazing. I said, can I still run my business? And they say, yeah, but you know, let's talk about it. And they said, why don't you teach one class first? So this is December, and I'm saying, you think that we're going to teach a class in January? They're like, oh, yeah. yeah, we can totally do this. And I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? But sure enough, over like the Christmas break, I get my transcripts, I apply, I do a doctrinal interview, I write the curriculum, and it was based on my book. So it wasn't hard. But anyway, here we are. Tonight I teach class 4 of 5, and I just walked over from Dr. Heyman's office to talk about, do I literally apply for the full-time position? So this is where we're at, man. This is real life. And I'm on, you know, maybe when this podcast comes out, maybe they'll say no or yes, or maybe I'll say no or yes, but this is where we are.
This is a really practical application of a lot of what Cedar 60 is trying to achieve, which is inspiring people to take the passions and the gifts. Dr. White said this in chapel on Monday, that the mission of Cedarville is to equip students with their gifts and their passions to pursue a vocational ministry. And I think that's really what Cedar 60 is about getting people to realize that wherever they are is a bridge between what God has called them to do and the people around them.
Wow.
And that, I think, is even so important in politics, but also in business, because the two interact around us. So you've been really wonderful in sharing that. If and obviously, you know, who knows where the Lord is going to lead you.
And I feel good about it to share it, because I feel like I have to force it zero. Mm. Like, if it happens, and there's very few times in life where I feel like that. Normally I'm trying to force something or something. I feel like if it's supposed to happen, it will. I feel like I'm going into it with excited, but also like, this is a big change and only God knows. So I'm comfortable sharing it with you.
So here we are 18 years later, you're teaching at Cedarville University. I've really been meditating on Psalm 37:4 lately, which says, delight in the Lord and he will give you the desires of your heart. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for students listening who may be interested in entrepreneurship, or people who are looking at their life and say, how can I use the gifts and passions that God has given me to make an impact, you know, in the world around me, to bridge the divide that seems to be tearing our country apart?
Yeah.
So I'm going to define the word entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. I've studied it, the etymology of it. Different languages have different meanings, but basically one who bears risk is entrepreneur, one who bears risk. So think about that. You might say, well, gee, that sounds scary. It's still working, right? Yeah. It sounds scary, but I'll tell you what. Look at Hebrews 11. Without faith, it is impossible to please God. That's pretty deep. So here we are. Entrepreneurs are people who bear risk, and yet the scriptures say that if we don't have faith, it's impossible to please God. In other words, I think the Christian life is one of risk. You see what I'm saying? Like, build an ark, walk across the Red Sea, you know, march around the city 7 times. Like, God is calling his people to step beyond themselves. It was Henry Blackaby who once said, is there anything that you're doing in your life that unless God shows up, you will fail? And it's like, for the American Christian, I know this is a stereotype, but at least for a lot of years, the answer is probably no. And so I think God is actually drawing all of his children into a faith-filled, adventurous life. And yes, some of those people into entrepreneurship.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. We really appreciate it. You've shared a lot of wonderful things. We give the last 60 seconds on the podcast to our guests to say anything that they're interested in sharing that they may not have been able to share that's still on their heart. So these last 60 seconds are yours.
I'll tell you what, I've just been blown away. You know, I've been following what God's been doing in our world. I went to that Asbury revival on Saturday. And I know that it's easy to write stuff off, but I'll tell you what, man, I was deeply encouraged. I went to chapel today at Cedarville, deeply encouraged. The 15 students in my class, awesome. And I just feel like if you're not on fire, it's probably not God's fault. It's probably our fault. So draw near to God. He has a plan. He wants to use your life in incredible ways. And like you just said, delight yourself in the Lord and He will give you the desires of your heart.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate
awesome.
Having
Thanks
you
for
on.
Having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Cedar 60 podcast. We hope you'll join us next time as we continue to explore politics and culture from the distinctive lens of the gospel. Don't forget to comment and share this podcast with friends, and we hope you'll join us next time. Thank you.